Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Principal Program Manager from the Windows File Server team, Klaus Jorgensen, joins Bob Hunt and Jose Barreto as they discuss how and why you would want to implement SQL Server 2012 over SMB3. Tune in as they chat about the benefits, how to set it up, as well as address any potential concerns you may have, such as performance issues. Bob, the mic is yours.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of TechNet Radio. My name is Bob Hunt. I'm an IT pro evangelist with Microsoft. My job is essentially to help IT professionals like yourselves learn more about the Microsoft technology. And today on TechNet Radio, we've got a couple awesome guests from the product group. So just by way of introduction, first thing that's important for you folks to know about is where to get this information after the fact, right? So my blog is www.bobhunt.net. My most frequently asked downloads you can get from a short URL, which is aka.ms/fab4, that's F-A-B-4. So today with me I've got the two folks from the product group, as I said. I've got Jose Barreto and Klaus Jorgensen. I'll let Jose, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi there. My name is Jose Barreto. I'm a program manager with the file server team. And I've been working in the Windows Server 2012 release, more specifically the SMB 3.0 piece and Hyper-V over SMB scenario.
Excellent. And Klaus Jorgensen, can you introduce yourself?
Yes, certainly. My name is Klaus Jorgensen. I'm a principal program manager in the Windows File Server team for Windows Server 2012. I work specifically with the SMB 3.0s as well as the SQL over SMB scenario.
Excellent. So that's a perfect segue into why we are here today, right? So today's episode is focusing on SQL Server over SMB. Jose and I have already recorded a number of episodes talking about a lot of the enhancements in Windows Server 2012 and a lot of the new things you can do with SMB3. So it's very important for us to continue to kind of flesh that out. And one of the cooler things we can do kind of on the application layer is leverage something called SQL Server over SMB. So most folks are familiar with SQL Server as a database engine. In the past, people are traditionally used to having, you know, this big SQL Server connected to a big fat collection of storage. Essentially what hosting SQL Server on Windows Server 2012 changes that by using, or I should say, allowing us to do some additional flexibility things with SQL Server over SMB. So I'm going to pose this first question to Klaus. What exactly is SQL Server over SMB, Klaus? Can you give us a nice definition here?
All right. So in the simplest form, SQL Server or SQL over SMB is taking a server that is running a SQL database, and instead of storing the SQL database files, the log files and the database files on what the SQL Server would perceive as local storage, which would be my D drive and E drive, whether that is local drives internal to the computer or on a SAN, you can now store these database files on remote storage. That means on a computer that is remote to the SQL Server that is running Windows File Server. So in that case, you will be storing it on what we call a UNC path, which takes the form of /, a computer name, / some share name, and then a path to the actual database files. That's the basic concept, that I can basically disaggregate my SQL Server from my storage. This gives me a lot of flexibility in my data center, because as long as my SQL Server is running somewhere where it has an IP connection to that UNC path, I can get to it. So if I want to upgrade my SQL Server to better hardware, I just move my SQL Server over there and point to those UNC shares, and I can still run SQL Server.
That's great. So leveraging, you know, so Jose and I have recorded a couple other episodes covering some of those features. So talk to me about performance, right? So Jose and I did a session on SMB Direct or SMB3 in general. So we're talking very good performance here, right? If I move essentially what is a most likely a critical workload like SQL, and I essentially segregate my storage from, where the SQL Server itself is running, am I going to introduce performance issues, or am I going to essentially not see any of those issues because of SMB3? That's great. So so leveraging, you know, so Jose and I have recorded a couple other episodes covering some of those features. So talk to me about performance, right? So Jose and I did a session on, you know, on SMB Direct or SMB3 in general. So we're talking very good performance here, right? If I move essentially what is a most likely a critical workload like SQL and I essentially segregate my storage from you know, where the SQL Server itself is running, am I going to introduce performance issues, or am I going to essentially not see any of those issues because of SMB3?
So you're actually going to see a very interesting performance here, because with the use of RDMA-enabled networks, we're essentially on par with what you would see with local storage. But at a much, typically a much lower price point. So what that enables is, for example, a SQL data warehouse scenario to run off where the database is stored on remote file shares and accessed over an RDMA-enabled network where we can not only take advantage of the fact that this network has RDMA on it, but also we can take SMB multi-channel into effect where if we have multiple of these, we can aggregate the bandwidth across multiple network adapters to get very high throughput to data to this SQL Server at a much lower price point that you would usually get at with more traditional storage solutions.
Yeah, and we would probably highlight that for data warehousing, when we're doing this over RDMA networks, that's really a home run because we can do very, very fast transfers of high amounts of data. But also for online transaction processing, the typical LTP workload when we're doing 8K, we have shown that we can keep up on, you know, hundreds of thousands of IOs per second in very affordable configuration. So you can do not only RDMA networks, you can do 10 gig networking or maybe even multiple 1 gigs, depending on what kind of workload you're trying to do. It's not always the network that becomes the bottleneck. So we've seen situations where you have, say, 12 disks, 24 disks behind the file server spinning disks, and those disks typically don't require more than a few gigabytes of throughput anyway. So the what we're seeing is the work that we did in SMB helps move the bottleneck to the disk storage. So typically the SMB protocol or the networking can be performing at a level that your bottleneck will still be on storage where it typically usually is.
And actually speaking to that, back at TechEd in November, I did a demo of SQL Server running a very high OLTP workload against a remote file share with 200,000 IOPS going on. And in that, we showed how we, on the file server side, could do a servicing scenario where you would basically fail over the file server from one node to another because you want to do some maintenance on your hardware. And basically, immediately after a couple of seconds, pick back, I'm running 200,000 IOPS.
That's fantastic. That's good. So that's a good segue into my next question, which is, okay, so it sounds like from a performance standpoint, we've got that, you know, we've certainly got that covered, so customers shouldn't be scared from essentially decoupling the SQL Server from where the actual storage, the actual databases themselves are running. So that's interesting. And you also mentioned there's some additional high availability options that come from this configuration as well?
Yes, that is correct. So there are two things that I want to highlight here. One is that when you have your file shares and you put them in a cluster configurations to make them highly available, then when you have Windows Server 2012 on your file server and you have your SQL Server running on top of Windows Server 2012, we can effectively do what we call SMB transparent failover. So what does that mean? That means that if I need to service a node, let's say I need to change some hardware out or I need to install some software updates which require me to restart said computer, then we transparently can move the workload from one of the cluster nodes to the other one without affecting the SQL transaction processing. The SQL Server, all it'll see is just a slight stall of a couple of seconds, and then it'll go on happily. This also works in the scenario where you have an unplanned hardware failure. For example, if you have a power supply failure in a computer of some sorts, then you would have a similar failover that is completely transparent to the SQL Server, so we would then pick back up the work on the second file server. On the network side, we got a feature known as SMB Multichannel, which you might have talked about in the past, that essentially can do the same thing if you have multiple network adapters. So I have, let's say, two network adapters between my SQL Server and my file servers. And then I'm, of course, on the normal operation, I'll be utilizing both. And then in case of a link failure on one of them, then you can use the remaining link to continue to operate despite the fact that you lost one of them. Both these failures and these maintenance scenarios are completely transparent to the SQL Server. So the file server administrator, when he needs to do these operations, does not really have to be closely in sync with the SQL DBA because, as I said, it was transparent to SQL. Yes, that is correct. So there are two things that I want to highlight here. One is that when you have your file shares and you put them in a cluster configurations to make them highly available, then when you have Windows Server 2012 on your file server and you have your SQL Server running on top of Windows Server 2012, we can effectively do what we call SMB transparent failover. So what does that mean? That means that if I need to service a node, let's say I need to change some hardware out or I need to install some software updates which require me to restart said computer, then we transparently can move the workload from one of the cluster nodes to the other one without affecting the SQL transaction processing. The SQL Server, all it'll see is just a slight stall of a couple of seconds, and then it'll go on happily. This also works in the scenario where you have an unplanned hardware failure. For example, if you have a power supply failure in a computer of some sorts, then you would have a similar failover that is completely transparent to the SQL Server, so we would then pick back up the work on the second file server. On the network side, we got a feature known as SMB Multichannel, which you might have talked about in the past, that essentially can do the same thing if you have multiple network adapters. So I have, let's say, two network adapters between my SQL Server and my file servers. And then I'm, of course, on the normal operation, I'll be utilizing both. And then in case of a link failure on one of them, then you can use the remaining link to continue to operate despite the fact that you lost one of them. Both these failures and these maintenance scenarios are completely transparent to the SQL Server. So the file server administrator, when he needs to do these operations, does not really have to be closely in sync with the SQL DBA because, as I said, it was transparent to SQL.
That's great. So, and essentially, you're also providing this high availability without doing any of that through SQL itself, right? I mean, SQL has some ability to make itself, you know, clustered and so on to provide the high availability. So essentially, this solution is doing it through what I would call very, you know, standard networking, right? I mean, essentially, you're doing this just on a file server that you would make highly available just like you would any other file share inside of the environment. This is going to look just like a regular file share for storing documents and so on, correct?
Yeah, and you also need to be careful because to have a truly highly available solution, what you want to have is the storage being highly available and SQL being highly available as well, right? So you're not actually saying that you don't need to cluster SQL anymore. You can still benefit from that. If the component that breaks is, let's say, is a power supply on your SQL server, you still want to make sure that you can have that SQL server in a cluster configuration, but this time around you can use your file share as storage for that cluster. So the cluster already fully supports the notion that you use your storage on a file share. We do that for Hyper-V and SQL Server 2012 does that as well. And all you need is that. It's two machines running SQL and then you put the storage on the file share, which could be being used for other purposes as well.
Yeah, that's great. Right. I mean, that's the running SQL Server in cluster configurations attaching to SMB file stores is supported with SQL Server 2012.
Excellent. And what versions of SQL Server is that going to work with?
That's SQL Server 2012, running on top of Windows Server 2012.
Excellent. All right, good. So, so I think the next thing that I think our viewers would like to see was actually see it running. So, Jose, you said you had a demo that you you wanted to show.
Yeah, it's something very simple that I created a blog post that describes a scenario. It's a functional thing. I'm not showing any performance, but just to show a scenario where you have a file server cluster and SQL storing the files over in that machine. And the basics is you need to set up a share, and you need to set up the permissions so that the SQL Server can access that share. So this is typically done by when configuring your SQL Server, you can specify a service account that runs the SQL Server. So both the SQL Server instance and the SQL Server agent run under that service account. And then you configure the share to allow that specific service account to come in. So when you do this, you're essentially allowing that configuration to work through the right permissions using SMB and all that. So we can do a quick glance at what that would look like.
Fantastic. Let's do it.
All right. So this demo configuration here essentially shows that I have a file server cluster. So in this case, you can see here my machine called DemoFS. And this machine essentially has there's a couple of machines, Demo F1 and F2 are the cluster nodes, and they expose what we call the scale-out file server, Demo-FS. So these are the machines that I'm working on, and you can see here that I have a few shares. One is the default cluster storage share here, and I have also my data and my log shares, and they go to two different volumes on this machine. So these are cluster shared volumes since I'm using scale-up. And this is very typical because if you're hosting a database, you still want to have that distinction between the storage that you use for your data files and the storage that you use for your log files. So these can have different performance characteristics, so we're enabling it here. Of course, I'm using the failover cluster management. We also have full support for PowerShell. A couple of things that I want to highlight here, again, showing the data and the logs share here. So I'm using my get SMB share PowerShell commandlet to see the two. And an important thing is permissions, right? So when we're allowing access here, in this case, I am allowing access to the data share using my get SMB share access. I'm checking the permission. So you see that I have both the administrator and the SQL service. So the SQL service here in this case is a service account. So when you're setting up your SQL Server instance, you want to run that on a service account instead of a local system account or anything like that, so that you can have this ability to authenticate between machines, in this case the SQL Server machine and the file servers, right? So I have that for both, and I can show you here, I have this for my data file, also for my log share. And what you can see in this case is that we have our information living on the file server. So if you go here and look at my cluster storage volume 1 folder here, you're going to see that I have my data folder. And you see that I have a folder for SQL Server there. And under that, I have my folder structure. So if you're familiar with SQL, you're going to see the usual infrastructure that you see there. And then down to the place where I have my files. And an interesting thing that you're seeing here is I have my master database here. I have my orders database. So This is new in SQL Server 2012, the ability to actually store all the files, not just the user files, but also the master, the model, the MSDB databases on remote file share. So that's an option that you have when you're installing it. So this is it from a file server side. So we're looking at this. You can see things like, for instance, what files are open on this file server. So you can actually see that SQL Server is actually actively accessing these files. Now let's take a look at how this looks like from the SQL Server side of the equation. So here I am on the SQL Server side, and if you're familiar with SQL Server, you know about SQL Server Management Studio. So I'm looking at a single instance of SQL Server, which we called here DemoDB is the machine name. And what I wanted to show is just a couple things to kind of show how this works. So if you go to the properties here of my database server, you will see that in general, this is a regular SQL configuration that I installed. Just a little detail here on the database settings, the default location for my data and log files is now on an SMB share. So from a configuration standpoint, the only thing you see different is normally this path here would be a local disk, like a D column something or E column something, as Klaus mentioned. But in this case, we have /demofs/data, which is the share that I configured for my data. And I have a similar thing for my log file, and I can also send my backups to the file server. So this is the general configuration of the database. And I have one sample database here, like my orders database. I'm going to go ahead and look at the properties of that database as well. And what you can confirm by looking at the configuration is that the files that comprise this database are actually stored in the file server. And you want to go look at the Files tab here. You see that I have a small little database here. But the important piece is to show that I have here my DemoFS data path to my database, where you can see here that I have my files, my orders.mdf data file and my orderslog.ldf file. And I'm using two different shares here, as I explained, because they could potentially be sitting on different disks with different performance characteristics, right? So in this case here, just so you know, this is a very simple setup that I'm using with virtual machines. I actually have a blog post that describes the full setup for this configuration, and these are machines running on very low RAM, but still you can show the scenario, you can exercise, and you can play with it. So this is a really quick overview of what it looks like to have a few shares configured for SQL, and then how SQL perceives that. And as you would expect, it's very simple and straightforward. Just use a UNC path. That's pretty much it.
That's a fantastic demo. Jose, that was exactly what I think our viewers are looking for, to understand this. And I understand you have a nice long blog post that talks about the steps to essentially get this working. So we should probably refer folks to your blog. And how can they find your blog, Jose?
Yeah, so the blog post is a long URL, but the overall blog is smb3.info. And that one is actually quite a long one, but it's nice because we want people to experiment with this and not just take our word for it that it works well, but play with the technology. And for that one, all you need is one computer with 8 gigs of RAM and a whole bunch of VMs to set this whole thing up. So start at smb3.info and search for SQL, or I'm pretty sure you guys can put the link on the show there, right?
Excellent. Yep, no, that'd be great. No, that's what I figured we would do. We'd point them to your blog and let them find it, search for it. Very cool. Well, thank you, folks, for attending today's session. Once again, my name is Bob Hunt, IT Pro Evangelist from New York. The best way to find me is my blog is www.bobhunt.net for my TechNet blog. And my most often requested downloads, things like Windows Server and Azure, can be found at aka sql.ms/fab4. Thank you today for both Klaus Jorgensen and Jose Barreto for helping out today. So this concludes today's session, and look forward to seeing you in future episodes of TechNet Radio.